Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. I know we have Cynthia Hostweiler hanging by on one line. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning. It's still snowing here in Falls Village.
Rather enthusiastically, I would say.
A little north, a little to the north and to the west. It's moving actually to the east, but it's moving northeast and popping up.
I'd just like to go on record as saying about 2 hours ago it didn't seem like it was moving at all.
All right. And it's Janet, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you? And yes, it is still snowing in Lime Rock.
Yeah. Here you go.
I'm telling you.
Nice little bit of snow.
I'm telling you, Marshall's living in a parallel universe right now.
No, it's doing exactly what it said it's doing.
It's snowing.
Yeah, it's very light here in Sharon. Very, very light. All right. Enough of this. We can go to the pages of the Lakeville Journal. I did an interview with Maria Horan a couple of days ago, and we talked about the opening of the legislative session. And right there, you see a picture of the state capitol and the lawmakers. The headline that is there is "Lawmakers Respond to D.C. Riot," and really, it's hard to imagine. But I talked about that with Maria Horn, a major part of the segment there. But your story opens up with Patrick Sullivan there.
So Patrick did get comments from Johanna Hayes and from Chris Murphy about D.C. They were pretty much just statements, but I'm hoping Hunter Lyle went to Torrington on Tuesday, and Chris Murphy was there talking about food pantries. So I'm hoping that he got a little bit more detail from Chris about what it was like to be in D.C. on that momentous day. But we also have, of course, the relatively peaceful opening day in Hartford, and a wonderful photo that Maria Horn had on her Instagram page, and we called up her office, and her assistant helped us track down the photographer who took that really lovely picture of the Capitol. And Patrick spoke to Maria and to Senator Craig Miner, whose main complaint was that it was very chilly outdoors, and he wished they could have done it indoors, but such is the breaks, and at least it wasn't snowing that day. But a nice little update on the session that's coming up. And, of course, Patrick talked to them more in depth about 2 weeks ago, and you can find that at tricornernews.com on our website, specifically about topics that they expect will be on the agenda for the coming session.
Yeah, Maria mentioned to me that they could hear demonstrators that were on the other side. They could hear demonstrators that had showed up to protest.
Mostly about COVID.
That was about COVID, but they've got more than that. I think the effect of what happened in Washington, D.C. is going to linger on to these state houses because of the FBI warning, where you have a bunch of people that have been elected to do their job, and they really shouldn't have any fear about going to do their job. It's the time we live in. Not much you can do about it.
Yep.
All right, off
speaking
to the...
We've got Kurt Anderson, who is Janet said she's seen it. Two people have now told me, Janet included, that he's been on MSNBC and Morning Joe every day. And Kurt Anderson lives in Cornwall now and was known to people of my age as the founder of Spy Magazine. But his two most recent books are called Fantasyland and Evil Geniuses. There's a third book in the middle there. But a lot of it is about people. It's about something that's been an element of the last 4 years, which is this idea of alternate reality and alternate truths. And so we talked to him about not only his books, but also about his impressions of, you know, sitting, of course, at home, as we all were, and watching the assault on the Capitol, and how it sort of fits in with him, with his observations about Americans and their willingness to sort of create their own narrative of what's happening in the world, and then to really fully absorb it and act on it.
Yeah, he did a show, Studio 360, for WNYC, which we carried for many, many years. But he decided to get more into the writing aspect of it because he's also a writer, as we all know. And, he moved to Cornwall, I think, about 3.5-4 years ago. Maybe a little bit before that, but anyway. Numbers have shifted. The Region 1 enrollment numbers are not as great as they thought they were going to be.
And it's unusual, I think, to see a shift in the numbers mid-semester, but of course this is the year when nothing's normal. And some of it is homeschooling, as you would expect, which is not a negligible number in the Region 1 school district anyway. There's more people than you would think are homeschooling. But there was a fair amount of families that came to the region, enrolled their students. I think the schools that saw the highest enrollment were Salisbury and Cornwall. And then there's been some shifting around. I think some people took their kids out. I think some people might have gone back to the city now. Some people chose to homeschool. So, you know, a slight shift in numbers, and you might look at these and think, well, you know, we're only talking about 8 kids. But when you talk about these schools with, you know, a tiny school population, 8 is a pretty high percent and can have an impact when you have a classroom, you know, that maybe has 3 children in it. If you lose 8 kids in the whole school, that it does definitely have.
Well, it's like the COVID numbers, the way they're reported up here. Everything is based on per 100,000 people.
Right.
So you can have 55 or 60 in a town, and it might have a rating against a city that has, let's say, a population of 100,000. That's the same. But that's just a percentage. That's what we look at, the same thing with the...
It's very confusing to read those COVID numbers.
Yeah. Actually, nowadays, it's very confusing to read any numbers.
Yeah, anything.
We'll move over to the other story that you did, Cynthia, America's Belief in Fantasy and How It Impacts Politics, because you're right from what you said earlier. There's now not only one set of facts, there's 2 or 3 or 4 set of facts that people go by.
Right, and that's the Kurt Anderson interview. He's a very interesting guy, and I was lucky to get him before he was off being busy with MSNBC. And boy, I bet he's been sitting around thinking about this, and he'd love to have someone to talk to. And I was lucky I got him in a moment where I didn't even have to ask him a question. He just went. And his observation is very interesting and not angry, really, in a way that was kind of refreshing, kind of calming. And interesting, and he observed something that I was observing too, and I was watching it, which is that a lot of people who are out in the street, you know, what was happening inside the building was very different from what was happening on the street, where there were a lot of people that were just kind of wandering around. And I thought it was odd, and he said, you know what it was like for him was, it was as though people had shown up on the set of their favorite reality TV show, and they were just kind of wandering around looking at everything. And I thought it was a very interesting observation. But lots of interesting commentary from him on you know, and I think in addition to whatever he's been saying on MSNBC, which I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, it's really much of the same. And you're right, he's so observational rather than judgmental. And it's really helpful in understanding where we are right now.
All right, we will go down to another story that's been a big story and was kind of calmed down at the last meeting of the Inland Wetlands Commission in Salisbury, the order against the causeway, which was a cease and repair order, has been lifted.
So this now takes this issue, I believe, out of the public forum, at least for the foreseeable future, with a property owner who wanted to make some what he feels are improvements on a property he owns that has a fairly strict easement on it, and it's really become kind of a cause celeb, certainly in the Salisbury area, with a lot of concerns about a lot of things. And so we tried to give the three major players, or the three major issues in this conversation, space in the paper over the last month or so, and this looks to be the end of the public conversation of it. Which I have to say I'm happy about, because it's become very ugly. That's actually all I want to say about it.
Well, what's interesting about the situation is, I think the reason it became so ugly so quick is what has happened previously in the past several years in Salisbury, with certain landowners taking certain advantages and doing things that they shouldn't have done. It led to this, and I think now that... The Nature Conservancy was the one who was affected in this. It almost like they got a bad name for this, and nothing really has been decided through the easement and everything. It's going to be interesting to see how it goes further. But it's nice to see it's calmed down, and it's not going to be something that's on the front burner for a while. Which you're absolutely right.
I would say that it's wrong to say it's calmed down. It's definitely not calmed down.
Well, no, there's people
out
that are
of the public.
That's exactly
public
right. That's exactly right. Let's go to a great story about the FFA at Housatonic Valley Regional High School and giving back.
Right, and a wonderful photo from Hunter Lyle. You know, you often get invited to these ceremonies and say, well, we're going to hand a check over to somebody. And it's like, oh, man, that's the worst photo ever. And Hunter Lyle took out this wonderful picture of the students in the FFA at Housatonic Valley Regional High School, and they had the money that they raised this year at the Holiday Production Store, which was significant. They sold out a week earlier than normal, I think because more people are up here, and I think everybody was indoors and was just thinking, boy, we really need to liven things up a little bit. Let's get our tree early. So they sold out of all their trees and wreaths. And at a certain point, the school shut down and went to distant learning, and it was the the teachers who were selling the trees and everything. So they made quite a bit of money, and normally what they would do is they would spend that money to help send students away on, you know, for conventions or for workshops and things. And this year they decided to take that money and give it to some of the organizations in the community that are really in need, especially the food banks. And nicely said, you know, the community always supports us, so we want to turn around and do something to support the community. And just a really lovely photo of Heather Dineen from the Cornwall Food Bank accepting a check and making some comments.
You know, as I went inside the paper earlier this morning when I got here to see the history of the CNE Railroad and the Twin Lakes Causeway, I had done an interview with Dick Pack, and he was talking about the causeway. What's great about this article is, if anybody listened to that interview, you get a really bird's-eye shot of what the causeway looked like and the trestle, which I think when people hear the word trestle, they think of these big, huge, high trestles. This is a great story and a great picture of the causeway.
Right. Rob Buccino did a lot of research through the Salisbury Association, and we also spoke to Dick Paddock, who's quoted in here. And Dick, of course, a longtime member of the Lakeville Journal family and a resident of Twin Lakes, lives on the channel and grew up in that part of Twin Lakes, and is also, in addition to his many wonderful qualities, is a historian and a railroad expert. So worked with Rob and us on this story. And the CNE Railroad, the Central New England, was a really important railroad in this region. And, of course, there's so many train buffs around here and train history buffs. And that hasn't really entered into this conversation about the causeway and the question of, you know, that this is a historic relic for many people, which is, of course, you know, it's not accessible to most people because it's private property. But still interesting, you know, you often hear about funny little places that the train ran through, right through what we consider fairly small, compact neighborhoods. It's impossible to think of a train going through. Catherine Boughton, the historian from North Canaan, who also knows, of course, a ton about the trains, would talk about how the impact of the train affected North Canaan because it was running so close to people's houses and they were powered by, you know, coal fire. And the sparks would come off and sometimes set fire to people's houses that were nearby. So when you see these narrow little areas where the train was running through and you think, how dangerous it potentially was. But it was really a lifeline for people, and that's a lot of what Rob Buccino talks about in this great article, about how it enabled people at a time when it would take a day or two to travel someplace that we think of as a short trip. They could hop on the train and, you know, see the world, go to Hartford.
A couple stories out of Salisbury, both by Patrick Sullivan. One, safety upgrades on the river, and also an interesting little story on the real estate sales have caused the need to get some assistance at Salisbury Town Hall.
Really great to see the town of Salisbury being proactive in this. And, you know, one thing that I think is on everybody's minds right now is, how long do you stay concerned about something after it's over? And over the summer, there was a lot of concern about people coming in from out of town and accessing the river at places that are not meant to be recreation sites and sort of, you know, cutting through the grass and the slopes and creating these sort of mudslides so that they could access the shores of the Great Falls, which are unexpectedly very dangerous. And I would say we have somebody, you know, we have a fatal situation there once, either there or in Kent at Bulls Bridge, I'd say once every 2 or 3 years. So it's not a joke, but it looks very placid. And it's dangerous. There's a lot of cars parked along the road, which gets in the way of rescue vehicles, whether or not they're coming to help somebody out at the falls or for some other incident, and a lot of trash being left there. So good to see the town of Salisbury meeting with First Light, the power company, which actually owns that section of the river and the area of the river along all the power plants, and trying to figure out ways to not make it inaccessible to people, but to make sure that they're accessing it safely and that they understand how dangerous the falls are. I keep saying there should be signs in you know, multiple languages, because it's a lot of people coming in who are, you know, not native speakers. And making those signs much bigger, because they're very small right now. They're often popped up at the top of a tree and maybe hard to understand. So meeting with First Light and trying to figure out how they can improve access, maybe improve parking, maybe move people down to areas where there is more parking or the parking is better, and make it possible for everybody to have a good experience this coming summer.
All right. Of course, this is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. We're speaking with Cynthia Hoswinder and Janet Manco. I want to go on to the opinion page before we get any further. And that is, and it's funny because I was talking about local journalism on the air just about a week, week and a half ago with Brian Ross saying that we here, especially and people who live in remote areas, should be on the cusp of fighting for local journalism because that's where journalism in most places for major papers that cover our area has been cut back. And some areas don't have newspapers at all and have to rely, unfortunately, on internet and some internet sources. And Janet, your editorial talks about the support of local journalism.
That's right. We're fortunate in that in our area, we have found support to be here. And our readers, when we put out a plea last year and let them know that we were in dire financial straits and, you know, asked if they wished us to be here and send some support if they did, we were astonished at the response and so gratified and couldn't have felt more encouraged to continue doing what we're doing. So, you know, that happened last year, and we weren't sure what would happen this year. It's an odd year in so many ways, and COVID has affected everything. And still, we have found support that will keep us going, and we were able to get a PPP loan, and we will hopefully be applying again for that. And we do, you know, it was impossible for our advertisers to support us in the same way as they had even in 2019 and 2020 because some just weren't around anymore and some had their own revenues cut so much. And so we want them to remain here, too. And so we are finding as many different ways as we can to find new revenue streams. And this is what I talk about here. And please do give it a read if you'd like specifics on that. And only gratitude from everyone at the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News for the support we have received and the encouragement. It keeps us going. And, you know, it's the same for your radio station, Marshall, I'm sure, as far as struggling within the economy the way it is now, but essential for this area. And it keeps our area vibrant and communicating, and especially now, it's so important.
Well, we had some generous donations. We just received notification that the state of Connecticut is going to be sending out a $5,000 grant to us, which we applied for. But like you, we applied for PPE and received that. And also, the Foundation for Community Health gave us a grant as well, I can't tell you how many businesses and local people chipped in. You don't miss local journalism until it's gone, and then all of a sudden you miss it, and it's too late to bring it back most times because it's too expensive.
No, it's absolutely classic. This is you never miss the water till the well runs dry, and you can't let that happen because it's impossible.
Nope. Yeah, and I mean, what would you have to complain about if you didn't have your local paper? So,
well, there's that too, right?
There is that, and that's okay. That means you're reading us. And so we love that. We love all the communication we receive, and we're here for our communities. And we have inside this newspaper on the beginning of the first section where we usually have the Compass page, we have a listing of all our contributors for our community contributor model in this year's giving. And so please do read through and see your neighbors' names. And thank you so much to every one of you.
And of course, along with that is the Dark Day for Democracy, which went on in the Capitol of Washington D.C., part two of that editorial. You know, but your letters to the editor also are an important part. And you have Tim Abbott from the who has a long letter in there about the causeway. You've got once again, A Step Too Far for Republic, Our American, lots of different letters, once again, from readers.
That's right, and we really do appreciate this. These letters are carefully thought out and really meaningful for bringing discussions forward in our communities, I believe. And so, yeah, A Step Too Far for this Republican, that's Dale Jones, who's a Sharon selectman, so don't miss that letter.
Yeah, and he put that up on Facebook, and the responses that I put that up on our site,
yeah.
And the responses that have come in are unbelievable, from a few negative ones to mostly positive ones for standing up what Dale has done.
Yeah, and I don't think Dale is looking for support or non-support. I think he believes very strongly in what he wrote here.
You know, it's hey, I became an unaffiliated voter back in 2016.
You mean an independent thinker? Going back to what you said about Dale.
You know, that doesn't change your core values. It kind of actually opens up your core values. But once again, lots of different letters. And that always shows that a newspaper is doing the right thing when you get those letters, both pro and con, to what you talk about.
That's right. And we do our best to run every single letter we receive. And we do have a couple of good columns this week as well from Carol Asher and Lonnie Carter. And more letters on COVID, the Falls Village housing, and again on the Twin Lakes Initiative.
And something about being in a small area, you do with your letters to the editor what we do with donations. We call back every person who makes a donation.
Right.
We actually call them just to let them know that it was done securely. But you call people back and talk about the letters. And if they're too long, you help people make them shorter. So
yep.
It's a service that comes in handy. And I think that's where people really have to understand the value of local media. Well, we're going to wrap this section up with the Compass, the tri-state events and you've actually got quite a bit on the Compass page.
It's been an incredibly busy. We kind of thought when COVID started that there would be no Compass, but there's been a lot going on. But I just want to quickly say too that this has been, you know, every week there's notable obituaries. You know, every life that's lost is important to their community. But we've lost a couple people. Ted Davis, who is well known, was a coach at Hotchkiss, a teacher. Father of M.A. Davis, and had passed away. And then at the same time, roughly, Daniel McMullen's father, John, had passed away, also a Hotchkiss teacher, and the two of them had coached together, and they had commented it was kind of sweet that you know, to read an obituary could be sweet. But also David Hummings, who...
That shocked me. That just totally shocked me.
Very David nice Hummings. Man, very well-known figure locally, and is I think only the second person where we have had a definitive, COVID diagnosis that's associated with it. So that's a very sad loss, and you know, our condolences to all the families for all of them. But for Compass, we have Simon Winchester, who's always interesting, really interesting, good talker and thinker, and seems very tweety and very conservative. And then you read about his life and the adventure travel he's done, and you're like, wow, he's one of those quiet guys that does a lot. But so he's doing a Zoom talk January 20th with Becky Thornton from the Dutchess Land Conservancy and Julie Hart, and they're talking about land and who owns it, which is a very interesting topic. And, you know, should the land be sort of available to everybody and not the sort of idea of like, well, that's my... I mean, interestingly, especially as we're arguing about conservation easements, which is a big deal around here. And, of course, you know, the Dutchess Land Conservancy, very active in protecting land. So that's coming up, sponsored by Oblong Books. And the Wasaic Project down in Armenia, doing always interesting stuff. And they've got a number of online talks coming up with different artists, including one with Natalie Baxter. That's tomorrow, January 15th. And my friend Jody Roth's wonderful play called Martha Mitchell Calling. And, of course, the name Richard Nixon comes up more and more in conversation. Interesting to look at Jody's play, essentially a one-woman show about Martha Mitchell and about her marriage to John Mitchell, and then her decision that what was going on in that White House was not okay with her, and she was going to talk about it and how what the consequences were for her, which were pretty serious. And then, of course, the Hudson Valley Gospel Festival, which is starting up on Zoom this year and is part of an ongoing series of sort of arts talks that are often very multicultural, which is very interesting. So information on that. And the Sharon Playhouse Gala Zoom, which they promise will be glittery and sparkling and has lots of interesting local performers as making special guest appearances. That'll be on January 23rd, and we'll hope to have a little more detail on that next week.
All right. Good job, and we'll speak to you guys next week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care. That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And, of course, you can find the Lakeville Journal on the web at tricornernews.com. That is tricornernews.com. And right here on a Thursday morning.